Your Next Big Move podcast for anyone involved in the buying and selling of businesses that wants to know how to do it right. Hosted by Zoran and brought to you by Exclusive Business Sales. Sell your business with certainty.
Thinking about brand? Most small business owners confuse branding with logos, colours, or one-off campaigns. But a brand is what lives in your customer's mind. In this episode of Your Next Big Move, Zoran, founder and principal at Exclusive Business Sales, sits down with Matt Braithwaite-Young, brand strategist and director at Turning Leaf, to unpack what brand really means, how to build one with limited time or budget, and when branding should take priority over lead generation. Whether you're running an accounting firm, a local pub, or a growing company with big ambitions, this episode will shift how you think about trust, identity, and long-term value. Let's get into it.
But by the way, we are live, all right? So let's start.
Oh, we're in.
Yeah.
So there's probably, I mean, we could take a step back and say, what is a brand?
What is a brand?
So a shortcut would be all of the attributes that a customer would have in their mind when they think about a particular business. That's a shorthand version of a brand. So that could be associations, it could be reputation, it could be feelings, past experiences, all of that bundled up. That's kind of what most people, I think, would say a brand is. It's not just the logo and a strap line. So a lot of people would say a brand is what you see as a logo or the strap line underneath it, and it's much, much, much more than that.
Okay, so the colours and logos, that's association, but like a brand is what you believe.
Yeah, that's
personality of a business.
That's right, and it's and consistency over time is what tends to build brand, because you tend to end up with distinctivity and differentiation, which we can go into later if we want to, but you end up with a more meaningful brand that stands out in people's memory. But the people that we're talking about are the customers. And in a very real sense, the brand isn't in your business. The brand is in the mind of your customers. And the strength of a brand is whether that exists out there or not.
Okay. A lot of comments I've got on this, but I'll start at this one. One of the definition of the brand that I heard of, and I thought it was quite clever and explains what it is. It's from customer's point of view, a shortcut to purchase. So if I've got a decision amongst 3-4 different products, and if I believe in a particular brand, being a luxury or being a quality or whatever it is, or being a cheapest on the market, maybe not the best, I'll go for that because that's what I'm looking for. Now, most of the brands that I came across are larger companies, but I want to talk about SMEs, small to medium businesses.
Sure.
How does a small business build a brand?
By being consistent. So there's a few things to think about. One is segmenting and understanding who your market is and who you really want to appeal to and go after. So that's the kind of the theory side of it. What is your brand, your overall strategy to deal with your brand? So do you want to be expensive for very upmarket rich people, or do you want to be accessible and low-end and have other features in the business? So are you IKEA or are you big a business?
We'd rather go for the bigger businesses. When does a small business decide, I'm going to build a brand, and how I'm going to build a brand? Just don't say the moment you started, because no one does.
Okay, right? Well, I'll go.
When I start a business, I just want to pay the bill. I want to survive.
When
does the decision about building a brand start?
Well, you don't get to make the decision because it's external and it's in the mind of your customers and your potential customers. The decision about whether you're in the business of branding isn't with you, in a sense. The question is whether you are going to intentionally build it and create a managed and stronger brand, or you're going to unintentionally end up with a brand. And there's lots of examples of great brands where no one ever set out to make a great brand. They were just able to end up.
Give me some.
Any local pub that has just traded in a highly visible spot for a very long time with a good, reliable beer offer.
Okay.
And and for a long
ambience
enough,
and atmosphere.
And they might not be sitting down and saying, well, let's generate a brand strategy with particular logos and typefaces and intent around that, but you end up knowing that the Royal Oak is on the corner of College and
some other street.
College and anyway, but you know exactly where it is and you know who's going to be there and the type of, and this is important for branding. It's a great example because you know that there's a pub that you would go to for a certain occasion and another pub that you would go to for a different occasion. So again, whether they've done that intentionally, taking a pub upmarket or downmarket.
I want to bring that to business sales. Yep. Right? Often people say, okay, well, what's my brand? Well, in my opinion, the way to value the brand is to look at how much that business is making money and what the bottom line of this of it is. Not in all of the cases, but most of the cases. Because that brand is partially responsible for creating all the profits.
Yes.
So you can't separate brand from the profits from valuation point of view. And we get a lot of people with that because they got a bit of a trademark or, you know, something registered and said, okay, what about this? Well, how much does it cost to register the trademark these days?
Well, it depends how you do it. You can get a lawyer to do it and they'll charge you $10,000 or $20,000, or you can do it with it's called the Trademarks Office directly, and they're actually one of the few areas of the federal government that, A, provide a direct service to consumers, and B, they're really good and helpful. They've got a they're not paying me to say this. They actually really are, and I think it's $350 a category or something like that for
That's what I'm saying. So you registered that. It doesn't mean that, like, I mean, it's a good idea because it's not expensive. To do it just on the odd occasion that you really make a huge success, it's good to have it registered. But the registration itself, it's not worth much money unless that brand's got some sort of pulling power.
No, and a lot of people will say, well, we've done a lot of advertising, therefore there must be a huge amount of value in our brand. Well, it depends. And to your point about how might you value a brand, the element of goodwill that sits with the business that is from the brand. A good way of thinking about it would be how much would you sell without using that brand? So if you removed a brand name, so we were talking before about a hotel brand, if you immediately changed the name of that hotel and patronage didn't change, sales stayed the same, nothing moved, then arguably the brand isn't worth much. But if you remove the brand, let's talk about a smaller business, but if you take a toothpaste brand and you remove the brand brand X and you make it brand Y and sales halve, then you could probably say that a huge element of the sales momentum is through people's mental shortcut to, and people in a lot of buying situations don't think too hard at all. They make repeat decisions on autopilot and brands help that. Every industry is slightly different because you'll have some where a lot of buying decisions are made quickly and on autopilot, especially lower value transactions. And then you've got other businesses and business types that have higher value transactions, and the name of that brand starts to bring extra trust and value. Okay,
but in most of the cases, I just feel like that in most of the cases, and correct me, I think I'm wrong, so feel free to correct me. When you're talking about brand, you're talking about the product. It's not necessarily like, because the service business can have a brand. But in most cases, like, you just use a toothpaste as example. Only because it's
an easy example to conceptualize. It's just as relevant for services, but I think it's harder to get your head around features of branding when you're talking about services, but it is just as important.
Is it easier to make a brand valuable for product than service?
I think so, but probably not because it's harder to develop communication to decide positioning and do all the things that you need to do if you decide to develop brand intentionally. But because service delivery is quite difficult to control, and because brand is all about repetition and recognition, it, to develop a brand in services, apart from just reputation, I've seen it before. If you want, when you're getting to that next level of, I know what to expect from that service, it's harder, I think, sure there'll be some exceptions, but it's harder to consistently deliver services than it is to consistently deliver products.
Same product. Yeah.
Now, it's also really hard to set up an operations system cost effectively in a factory or somewhere, so that they've got different challenges. But I think building a brand in services is quite is
but also
quite challenging.
I think if you're building a product that you don't control the chain, the way that it gets delivered, the brand is essential, because if people don't know the brand, why would they buy something?
Yeah.
So you're responsible for building a brand and hoping that the resellers will sell it. When you're selling a services, in most of the cases, not always, but in most of the cases, you do sell those services. So maybe the brand is a little bit less important. You don't have to. It's not crucial to build it. You can work without a brand, and brand's going to build itself.
Well, another way of looking at brand is exactly as you said. A brand will build itself if an accounting firm has delivered good, consistent services for local businesses for 50 years. The mere fact of making those repeat sales will be developing branding in the minds of presumably the client base and the market that they're going after. So that's good.
This is the way I see it, and I'm expect again to challenge me on this. But you got two options. You can put a lot of money behind the brand so you get that exposure and repetition, or you can put a lot of time into building a brand if you don't have the money. Is there a way to build a brand on the budget and do it quickly, so not over 50 years? You just use an example, 50 years. Well, I'm not going to live another 50 years, so I don't have 50 years to build it. Can I do that in two?
Yes, I think you can. And like most of these things, if you go out and have a lot of money to spend, you can probably do it quickly. If you are able, if you're fortunate enough to be in a position to generate publicity for one reason or another, so examples might be small business owners, and there's lots of them who have fame, acquired fame. And by the way, that's another way of thinking about a brand, is a big brand is a famous brand in any niche. So it could be famous in the mining industry or in...
Correct. If I'm a local pub, people in Europe don't have to know.
You don't need to
know.
That's exactly right. So if you think about brand as becoming famous for stuff, then...
So you're the marketing guy, all right?
Yep.
And we got a business. Pick a business. Give me the idea, like an accounting firm, all right? And how would you go about building a brand for the accounting firm quickly?
Well, the first thing is understanding the customer. So it's kind of counterintuitive, but you almost have to slow down and think, right, what, before you quickly establish a brand, you actually have to slow down and understand your target market and what they want from you. Because if you want to quickly establish a brand and get a reputation for a particular niche or positioning within a market, then understanding the customer is probably more important than understanding you. And a very easy mistake to make is you kind of lock everyone up in a room and decide to build a brand, and we just kind of, we think about ourselves. But actually the way to accelerate...
So the first question is, who's my customer? So I figure out demographics, what they needs, wants, and all that jazz.
Yeah, and even better, you might find that there are some... In your accounting firm, you find that there are some customers that A, you prefer dealing with, B, a higher yield, give you a higher long-term value, and C, are relatively underserved, or your competitors don't serve very well, and you think, aha, I've got a sweet spot. And now you've got a focal point for your brand. And the reason that's important is that if you don't have a bit of a laser focus on a type of customer that is your type of customer that you want to go after, it's very easy to start looking and feeling and mixing in with all the other brands in a category.
Okay.
But to accelerate it, you want to be more focused on one type of customer, and then it becomes much more easy to work out the other parts to get a quick brand.
So what are the other parts?
So you, I mean, essentially you would look at what are the repeating elements that you would like your potential clients and your existing clients to see and feel when they interact with you. So obviously a brand name itself becomes important. So, and very rarely, by the way, is it actually a good idea to change business names and brand names. But occasionally you discover that the brand name that you're working with is not relevant for the market that you want to go after. What's an example of that? A business that works in the space of generic vet medicines, and they're called Generic Medicine Co. And then they find that actually they're selling most of their services to, say they're a law firm, and they're selling most of their services to branded mainstream vet pharmaceutical companies, and the name itself would put off the customer. And it happens not very often, but sometimes. So the name itself is part of your branding. Mm-hmm. Then you've got any associations around that. So let's assume that the name is fine because it's working with an accounting firm, right? So it's Smith & Smith. That's fine. So you would leave the name.
I just want to start something with the name. A lot of people, when they're starting a business, they put some serious effort into thinking of a name. I really don't think it's important. What's important is the service and the product that you deliver that eventually people are going to associate with that name.
I completely
agree. I'll give you a good example. Yep. Apple, for the computer, largest IT computer company in the world. It would work for the fruit shop, but it doesn't really matter. The quality, the repetition that you said many times today, it's much more important than you associate that brand with, or that name with that brand.
I agree, but with a caveat. So firstly, what I agree with is that people overestimate the importance of a brand. Of a brand name.
Okay.
The name, you're right. And so we'll spend far too long trying to find a perfect name. And in any event, that perfect name is often already trademarked by someone else. So you find a perfect name that you think is evocative and the perfect fit. And by the way, we can get into technical. You don't want a descriptive name, which is often where people fall into the trap. They think, I'll get a descriptive name that describes what I am, but that's not trademarkable because everyone has the rights, as you know, to be able to use. So the Apple Computer Company couldn't have been the computer company because we need to be able to use the word computer, the words in that order. So that's an unregisterable. It's actually a poor choice of brand name. But by and large, I completely agree with you. Your broader point, in most businesses, especially in B2B, business-to-business markets, it's far less important that they pick the perfect name and much more important that they get out there and do a good job and build a reputation and repeat business.
And
that itself is what generates branding around the name.
I just want to bring you back to what I asked you originally. How do we do this quickly? So we got the name now, right?
Okay, so you're happy with the name. So the second thing
is called Strawberry.
So you want to strawberry accounting.
Okay, Strawberry. Well,
it probably would work. So one of the things is, and this is the upside of a distinctive name, is that people tend to remember it more because you'll remember in 6 weeks' time, if I say, what was the name of the accounting firm that we thought of?
Smith & Smith, but Strawberry Accounting.
That's exactly right. Which is probably why Apple is not a bad name. It's distinctive, and distinctivity is important. So I would say, a really interesting exercise for almost any business is to list down for that ideal customer that you've got in your market, and it might be, say, for an accounting firm, the ideal customer might be other local small businesses, or it might be a niche or an industry that they specialize in, or whatever that is. But if you kind of write down what they experience when they interact with you, and that could be the your website, your communications, what you say, how you dress, It could even be, and this might be pushing it a bit far, but I'll go there for the sake of it. How does the business smell? Are there flowers? All these things actually add up to make an impression on a human, because basically we run around with flesh and blood and we think about stuff, but we also don't think about a lot of stuff. And all the senses are how we process a brand, including touch, surfaces,
okay, so
sounds, the so lot.
So we established the brand. What would you call that? Brand feeling, brand...
brand sense audit.
Okay, but brand something.
But to answer your question, I think, you know, at the most obvious example that almost anyone would immediately understand what that this might be helpful is, a lot of businesses aren't terribly consistent between, if you went to their website and then they sent you a letter and you arrived outside, a very simple way to build a brand fast or faster is just having consistency, because that's what your aim is, building frequency and consistency of exposure.
Okay, so frequency and consistency, these yep. are the two components. Okay, so again, I've got a limited budget. I don't have a 50 years. I want to do it in 2 years.
Yep.
What's the way to, you know, make this brand grow so quickly?
So when you say limited, you might have some budget. Yeah, and that some budget. Budget might help you make sure that you've got consistency in the ways you express the business to people, but they're not magic, right? So you have to put stuff in front of them. Mm-hmm. You have to talk to them, and the language you use and the language you won't use is actually part of your brand as well. So these things help you establish a brand personality.
Social media, there could be one way of going out there, because it can go viral. People, you know, the people that share it and then. You know,
it's a bit like it's like teenage sex, though, because most of the businesses that I come across think that absolutely everyone else is killing it in social media and going viral, and they're also telling everyone that they are, but really no one is.
that's where I was getting. Actually, at.
Cut that out.
No, I'm not cutting it out. But it's a good example. Like, you know, we all talk about it. I think it's look, by far, in our business, most valuable thing is our mailing list, all right, by far. So we've got a good exposure on social media and all that jazz. And when you look at what you're getting from your mailing list versus what you're getting from your social media, it's so far apart, yeah, all right?
Before I diss social media too much, I mean, obviously there are eyeballs that you can purchase. I mean, if you're talking about advertising where you're paying money for Facebook or Insta or whoever to put your brand in front of your customer, then to a certain extent I don't see that as social media. That's just advertising. But viral magic where you're getting free exposure. Look, I think it does happen. I know it doesn't happen in many businesses. Some industries are better set up for it, like young female fashion is an obvious example. But then that's a very competitive, low margin, difficult industry. And so I think good luck to anyone that cracks it. But I think it's a hard, in some ways, well, it's a risky way to try to build a brand quickly. Free social media. And in any event, these social media platforms have changed. I mean, in the last 20 years, you can list off the, you know, we're old enough to remember MySpace, and that's not even that long ago, right? What's that, 15 years ago, MySpace?
I think it's been more than 15 years.
And YouTube's like, YouTube at maturity is 13, 14 years, something. I mean, these social media platforms come and go. TikTok's only a couple of years old. And you need to be pretty lucky to line everything up to magically grow your brand. I have a fair amount of skepticism towards.
So I'll tell you where I'm going with that, because when people come to us to sell businesses, and there's a lot of conversation about this brand, and my opinion, it's not nowhere near as important, or well, no, it's important, but it's not as valuable. You can't separate it from most of the businesses that come to us. You just got to look at it as a going concern, and it all comes together. But a lot of people, like I heard it so many times, and you have, I'm sure, heard it too. Word of mouth is the best for advertising. Yeah, but it's the slowest one as well.
Correct.
Right? So you need to spend some money. So a couple of things that you touched and I want to talk about. You mentioned advertising.
Yeah.
And he says this is not building a brand. That's advertising. So what's the difference between advertising and branding exercise? And when would one start thinking about building the brand rather than advertising? Because advertising is simple to understand. I spend the money and people call me for my services and then sales start from there.
Yep.
But that branding, when do you start with that and how do you get into it?
Well, a way of thinking about it is that branding you're going to be building in everything you do, including advertising if you're doing it. But if you're choosing to just work with word of mouth, you should still be trying to, if you decide to go down the route of overtly and intentionally building your brand. By the way, I agree with you. I think people can overestimate the value of a brand, especially for a small business. Say you have a solo operator and someone's become quite well known personally, then how valuable is the brand versus the solo operator running that organization, for example, for a very small business? So there's that. And then, so is advertising building brand? Well, it does, because presumably you're going to be using your brand in the advertising. So you're getting two for one. And then we can have an interesting conversation about role of advertising to build the brand as the primary intention of the advertising versus lead generation.
Okay,
not so wanting to get into the jargon, but you've got top of funnel activities where you wouldn't expect anyone considered.
Let's
your
talk
brand.
About it.
Yep.
All right. So we're talking about lead generations versus brand building, but both things are advertising in your world. So when do you decide to do one or the other? To me. For service, our strawberry accounting, right?
Yep.
Especially in the early days, what they want clients, and at the beginning, clients are very important to me, and I want to spend money in advertising that's going to generate the leads. It comes to the point, and it's that I generated all the leads that I can from the advertising that I'm doing. I'm as efficient as I can. Originally cost me $100 to get a lead. Now I'm down to $50 to get a lead. And when do I start thinking about branding? Because what I heard, and I wanna hear your opinion on that branding takes longer, but then on the longer term is much cheaper to actually generate leads, while the leads are immediate, but they're more expensive at the beginning. So
yeah,
can you expand on that?
True. Yes, that's right. And don't forget that even. You were kind of saying, what's the general kind of advice? Well, you would usually start at the cart is the old direct marketing expression. So if you're going to start anywhere, and especially if you're a new business, you start as close to the sale as you can. So you make offers, you generate leads that are fairly directly associated with what you can provide, and then classically over time you then put yourself into a situation where you can spend, and this is the kind of paradox of going into more classically branding type promotion, is it costs more, but it's more efficient. Your budget goes up, but it's a more efficient spend, and it builds a return over a longer period of time, and it's harder to pin down. But what you do find is greater efficiencies through the funnel, because people are already aware of your business, and you're not having to educate them from square one, and they are more likely to quickly go through the funnel when they have the buying need.
Is there any rule of thumb, let's say, for our strawberry accounting?
Yep.
We should have checked if there's a strawberry accounting.
No, they probably.
By the way, it's not associated with any strawberry accounting.
Well, they might be very good.
Fictional strawberry accounting. And when I'm going back to this and I'm looking on all the businesses that I've seen in my life and my businesses, you always want leads. Leads are, yep. you know, what's the point of having a branding if the phone or doesn't ring and emails don't come in? So, but when do, is there a way that I can discover now? Not discover, but when do I start thinking about branding? Obviously, it starts, you know, you got your consistency through advertising. That's part of the branding. But when do I start doing advertising not for leads but branding?
Oh, I would say when you have, if you're going to start at the cart and you have found, you know, you've started a business and you have found a way of generating a consistent stream of leads. These days, often that is through search marketing or online, frankly. That's, you know, a lot of businesses, especially in business to business, but or also consumer businesses, small businesses of almost any size, they'll start and their leads will come through online inquiries, and you can start there. And you mentioned some cost benchmarks, but the truth is it's quite expensive. But at least you get the lead and you get a chance to build a business. And then at some point you can think about going up the funnel and starting to do more classic, more work that's about building brand and awareness, so that when they do need you, they think of you first, rather than the lower down the funnel lead generation work, which is assuming that they've got that problem now. They're actively evaluating you versus your competitor. That's right at the bottom of the funnel, and now you're in a shoot off. Tends to be quite expensive and search advertising. You might pay, you know, $2, $3 a click or more, or $20 on LinkedIn. You know,
back in
old days,
1970, before the internet.
Well, that's right.
Like, it's crazy expensive, but some of this pay per click. But okay, so when?
So when if you look at, and most businesses are pretty happy if you know your numbers and you're converting a reasonably good percentage of your leads that are coming in through bottom of funnel. Now let's assume that's search marketing, but that could also be direct marketing, catalogs, or most industries have an equivalent. What's another one? I mean, even trade shows to a certain extent.
Some businesses, trade shows are, you know, fantastic. Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of the money you pay for a trade show is for the two or three people that are ready to buy. And if you're thinking, I want a very direct correlation between the money I'm spending and the branded lead funnel that I'm building, then there might only be three or four people in that stream that you're actually going to sell to, and you end up and you've got a fistful of potential future contacts. And the branding work starts to come into its own when you're looking at those potential future contacts at a trade show level. And
so is it fair to say that the branding is lead generation from branding, it's got much longer pipeline?
Longer pipeline, generally much lower. So often it will be, let's go back to digital to keep it simpler for the conversation. But if you've got expensive bottom of funnel now leads, then one way of thinking about it is that you've also got the soons and the laters. And you pay more because of the way the system works, and we talk about the auctions and why, but effectively, if you want leads that are ready to buy now, you tend to have to pay a lot.
Mm-hmm.
If you are happy to wait a little while and do some nurture yourself for the soons, then you pay a bit less. And really efficient long-term branding work takes time, and they're the laters. They're not even in the market, but you're communicating to them at very low...
I still got a... bit of a problem understanding this, all right? When we go back to...
It's probably a problem with me explaining it.
No. You're explaining it, all right? Like, you didn't talk about this, so I'll ask you this question. Maybe yep. I'll understand better now. Going, like, prior to the internet, we had a TV and we had a radio and we had the newspapers.
Yep.
And I have seen brands delivered their way, all right? So brand advertising their way. you know, happy people holding hands, rushing around, a lot of money, accounting, blah, 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 whatever, right? So you can replace this and all, but you know, the TV doesn't have a nowhere near as impact as it used to. Okay, we can come back to this. Like, well, I know a lot of people that, like, I haven't watched TV in about 3 years, 5 years maybe, all right? So radio, I'm going to listen in the car, but look, I'm not doing this now anymore. I'm listening to podcasts, all right? And papers. Yeah. Look, there is a certain, like, not the newspapers because we're getting news from the phone, but there are certain magazines and stuff like that. It's still kind of really attractive. So how do you build, what channels would you use to build for brand advertising, not for leads? So leads, and we know where we get, no, we talked about it a little bit, but brand advertising.
So the answer in this area is always, it depends. It depends on who you want to go after. So let me use an example. So I agree with you.
So we got our strawberry accounting.
Yeah, strawberry accounting. And let's say they've decided to focus on...
Small business.
Small business. Okay, that's fine. I was going to say, what if they focused on 65? I'll just make one point quickly and then we'll come back to small business. Yeah. But say they were going after 65-year-old retirees.
They didn't.
Right?
They just want small business, any type
of... No, but I just want to make one point, okay, because otherwise you're going to write off newspapers, right? Because okay, you'll say they're dead. And you're right, except for this one little pocket of opportunity, which is if they were going to, and I know they're not, but if they were going to zig down that path, you can find channels that are really, really quite well matched for your audience. So let's zag. They decided not to do that.
Well,
so
another thing why I would zag that is because you got like 5 years worth of advertising and those people going to move out of the businesses. They're going to retire. So you need a new generation. So if you're an accountant, yeah, I want so somebody in business that's 30, 40, 50 years of age rather than somebody who's going to retire in 2 years. So let's go back to this.
Yep.
Strawberries.
So strawberry would say, well, actually what I want is, let's say they're looking for a local, are they after local small businesses? Probably.
Maybe not. Look, you know, with accounting now, a lot of stuff is done online. So no, New South Wales.
New South Wales. So something like LinkedIn. Makes a lot of sense. You want to go after a particular, you might find that a typical accountant has good cases and experience in certain industries. So LinkedIn is a good way of putting display ads, which is a display ad is basically not someone who's right now looking for an accountant, like literally typing into the computer, new accountant, sick of old accountant, you know, worried about going to jail. But is starting to think, so we talked about the nows, the soons and the laters. If you can put an ad up in front of a soon or a later with an offer that makes them scratch their head and think, well, actually that might be of interest. That might be something that could help me. Then yeah, that's so, a classic so opportunity okay, for a channel like LinkedIn or even in digital Facebook where you can basically find and
that's
where anyone you're find anyone
that's
you want.
Where you're going to find the 65-year-olds.
Yeah, that's right. I mean,
okay,
it's aging.
So yeah, how did Facebook become a aging demographics? I don't know, but anyway, so you would choose LinkedIn and Facebook. It's just like how many eyeballs you're going to get there, and how often. Versus what we used to have, TV and radio and repetition. I mean, how much money do you have to spend on this to get some, like, state
well,
exposure
well, like, it's funny,
for,
I can,
for strawberry?
Without giving away too much information, we worked with an accounting firm and ran a LinkedIn campaign on Easter Sunday several years ago and got 10... perfect quality leads for about, I think it was $7.50 per lead.
But I'm going back onto leads. I want to build a brand.
Yeah, that's interesting. But you make a good point there. But what's interesting about that is that to generate a lead out of a display ad, which is again not someone typing in, I'm looking for this. It's putting your brand and an offer or a message in front of them. To get a response on Easter Sunday at a relatively reasonable cost was step one in what ended up being realizing that this business is able to get to people very effectively through LinkedIn, through its targeting options. Because with LinkedIn, you can basically say, I'm looking for businesses of a certain type. Show them this offer. So I think LinkedIn is it, and I'm not a huge fan of LinkedIn either, because they're owned by Microsoft now. They are quite expensive to work with, but they are quite good for business targeted campaigns, branding and otherwise. But all of the research in marketing is now showing that what generates really good branding results is a mix over time. And in my time in marketing, which goes back to, I guess, 1996, I think, was when I was first working in the industry, and the training used to say, literally they used to say, you'd be better off focusing on one channel. So just go after TV, or just go after...
So why is that?
Well, what they thought was that focus and management theories go in waves until someone can actually prove it one way or the other. But the theory in vogue was that if you concentrated your resource, you would get greater frequency out of, say you chose to communicate via, I don't know, let's say TV to keep that story going because it's real. And they would say, well, don't spread your money across all the channels. Go to one channel. You'll get better focus. And so not only are you focusing your brand message on one medium, television, you're focusing on one channel in that one medium. And the theory, the kind of management theory at the time was that that would provide you with this laser focus and more. And of course, it does give you more negotiating power with a TV station. You say, well, I've got $100,000 to spend. The individual TV station will be more happy to do extra deals with you, some frequency. Yeah. So you do get some extra. But the penalty is that you don't get the spread of impact. And the research over the last, gradually coming out over the last 30 years, has been humans don't digest things the same way every day. And coming across your brand in different ways has a huge benefit. So if you see something on television and then hear about it on the radio and then your friend mentions it at the pub, the accumulated value there is greater than if you mathematically determine what they're worth as individual channels. There is a multiplier effect.
In your opinion, how important is creativity in those ads versus exposure?
I think it depends a bit on the category. There are some categories where the creative standards are quite high and it's difficult to get cut through unless you do something quite interesting. Other categories, the mere fact that you're there and communicating will make you distinctive. And Marshall McLuhan, has had the saying, the medium is the message. I mean, sometimes just being there and communicating is a hugely important thing. And people get very upset about getting the perfect creative. Sometimes it would be better for them to have imperfect creative talking about a decent offer to the right people at the right time. That's probably, for 99% of businesses, the better advice is get out there and say something than try to perfect the creative.
When you look at some of these big events like Australia Open or Super Bowl or whatever it is, all right, like, I think part, and I'm not an expert on any stretch of imagination in this field, but it's just my feeling as a customer, as a consumer. When I'm looking at somebody advertising, it kind of gives me a sense of comfort because, hey, this guy's going to be here tomorrow. Because if they're prepared to invest, being there, I know it's expensive, even right away you think millions, all right? So if somebody is prepared to put millions in this marketing, they're here in the long run.
Yes, and
it gives me subconscious feeling of security. Because, hey, they wouldn't do that rather than somebody just sending me some emails, which I know they're free.
And there is actually evidence that effect, so they have established that that is a valid. There are some other purposes of so we're kind of moving beyond branding into advertising and when and why do you advertise? Mm-hmm. And that's one that is one of the reasons. It does signal to people that you have a longevity, a commitment. I mean, people know that it is expensive to do advertising and building a brand. And it is. It's expensive. To your earlier point, it's either expensive in money or time or consciousness for people who are doing it intentionally. And for those who don't do it intentionally, there's a 50-year-old brand and a whole lot of work that's gone into the consistency to build it. So brands genuine, I think it's true to say brands do represent an investment. And it is true for a customer to think that there would be more at risk for a brand owner to stiff them than a non-brand owner, because a brand owner risks the equity and the reputation with all their other customers.
Yes, but doesn't, reputational damage is a big
just,
one, yes.
If it's just brand X accounting, I mean, there's literally nothing to pin the bad service on. Then
so you're actually not tricking anybody. It's not like, it's just not a good business for any business to spend a lot of money in branding and then do a shonky job, because whatever I've done, I'm just burning these customers. So kind of all evolves together. So more I'm aware of the certain brand, chances are that brand is better because yes. I am more aware right. because they've been and in the past for with us for a long time and they're probably investing serious amount of money with intention to stay with us for a long time
that's
going
right.
forward, which means I have to give you what I'm promising, otherwise you're not going to, it's all worthless.
Yeah. Right, and there's a couple of other interesting, similar insights into why. I mean, there's no doubt that building brands and advertising works. The question is, is it the right decision for any individual business? But you can obviously look around and you look at any number of small, medium and large businesses anywhere in the world, and they are spending a lot of money on the process and the costs associated with branding.
So
it, you know, there is something in there. It's just can be hard to pin it down.
Most of the businesses, and I'm a small business owner, and most of us think brand is left for somebody who's got a multi-million dollar budget. All right. How much money do you need to the brand? Okay, I know what you're going to say. Don't say that. All right. But when I'm doing my advertising, I'm doing in branding. But if I really want to do branding advertising, how much money do I need to set aside that works for me?
I'm going to answer that question, but I want to finish one point first, which is that another interesting feature of doing this work is that it acts as a moat, if you like, from competitors entering a space. And this is well-trodden work as well. So when you have developed a brand and are doing, let's say, marketing, advertising, promotion, you're building a brand, it tends to discourage competitors from entering your local patch. Because let's use the pub example.
That's it. Okay.
Do you go next to the well-branded pub that's pumping and looks really all over all of its work with its customers? It's really tight. It's doing constant promotions. The branding looks fantastic. Or do you go somewhere else?
So you're talking about, well, this is too hard to enter, I'm going to go somewhere else.
Yeah, I'm talking about the impacts, a further impact of branding on a business is a little bit harder to put your finger on, because it's not that extra margin that you can charge. It's actually the hidden opportunity cost in reverse, if you like, of a non-entered competitor, because they go, why would I enter this market? It looks difficult, expensive.
Not only why would I enter, it's going to be much harder for me to win this guy back. I know it's cost me more. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, back to how much it costs.
How much?
Look, the real answer is you can build a brand for zero incremental cost over what you currently do. But your question is about speed.
Correct. That's all conversation was about speed.
Yeah, that's right.
I know how to do it
I don't want to say it's impossible to build a brand without much money at all. Because if you are consistent with how you present yourself. There are lots of great examples. But now let's put that aside and you know, look if you look at kind of benchmarks, the reality is that it's hard to get anyone to get out of bed to do anything for you substantially for, I don't know, let's say $20,000 might get a small business in a local area quite a lot of attention, but it would not touch the sides for a
national
business, for example, if you're looking at kind of media spend over a year in digital. And again, it's really, really hard because every business has a different target. The targets have vastly different costs to reach them. So if you're on LinkedIn and you're trying to do some branding work and get famous amongst a certain group, if that certain group that you want to get famous against happens to be CEOs of Australian businesses, that costs you like $10 or $15 a click. I won't try to do the conversion into cost per thousand, but it's really expensive to do that. But if what you're after is a market where there's low competition and, I don't know, say you're after tire fitters, you can still get them. You can still find these people out there. You can either go around and go, and it'd be much cheaper.
It's a tough question. I mean, like, you know, really depends on the industry and everything else. But like, is it possible? I still got a feeling that if you really want a good brand, you need at least $1 million a year.
I don't quite agree with that because it depends on. I mean, I've worked with businesses where. They've said we've put aside $1 million a year, and that million at the scale they want to operate against the competitors they're about to operate against is it's an order of magnitude too small. Yeah. I mean, they need to have $10 million to be to make any meaningful impact.
It happened a lot with microbreweries and stuff like that.
But on the other hand, you can see plenty of examples of businesses that, you know, and the secret tends to be to try to build fame in a small and cost-effective area first. So the $1 million, I want, we'll talk about a pub, I want every type of drinker from a nightclub goer at night to a tradie finishing their work. Yeah, I'm going to have to raise it. It's just really, really, it's possible and expensive. And then you do, even if you're a local pub, you might need $1 million. And even then it doesn't make a difference. But if you go after a specific
market, you also got the capacity, eventually you can get more fit more people in it, all right? So another question I got, and you always kind of I understand how people I can visualize by talking to people and seeing the brand from the outside, how most of the market perceives a particular brand. But I have a hard time and seeing how other people see my business.
Yes.
And a lot of business owners I was talking to, they said, well, you know, I don't know how people see me from the outside. What's the way to find out how the people actually see you from the outside if you're the business owner?
Oh, that's such a good question. And the way to do it is through research. And now, in the old days, market research used to be very expensive. And the reality is that business owners do get very close to their business, and it is extremely difficult for anyone in any particular business to actually have a proper perception of what it's like to be a customer. And I've always thought the best example of this is a car dealer.
Yeah.
So, and the reason for that is a car dealership can be a small business, or it's often will be a small business. And car dealers are the perfect example of this problem because they never buy a car. And you'll find in a lot of industries, the people in their own business, in their own industry, they do not participate in the market. So not only do they have no idea about what they look like to their customers, but they never
how the market looks like.
But I'm not even joking. I mean,
you probably sell
automotive businesses from time to time, and these people, they do not go through the process of buying a car ever through their entire career.
They don't know.
Well, why would you? You get a loaner from either your business,
and you can drive a different car for the one.
It's not being critical. I'd like it as well. But you could take that example into almost any sector. So an accountant,
okay, so how
strawberry
do we,
accountant, doesn't actually have any idea what it's like to not know accounting.
To deal with accountants, right. All right?
I know, it's such an obvious point. So how do you do it?
Yeah.
And the answer really is to try to, so there's kind of expensive answers and cheap answers. And the cheap answer is actually to go and ask customers and in some ways ask them questions that are indirect enough that means that they are not just telling you what you want to hear. And this depends a little bit on the scale of the business. So a larger business, even a larger small business, can get very good insights from customers by ringing and asking them some questions. And customers they are able to switch off looking after you and not insulting you. When you ring up and you say, I've got these questions, I'm asking everyone the same questions. I want you to be honest. And people will generally be pretty good. But even better than that is finding someone
independent
who can do that
who
work.
Who doesn't even say where he's coming from. I'm just doing the research.
Well, they can say, I'm calling from Zorin on behalf of Zorin. But I'm, or in your case, I'm calling on behalf of Exclusive. But I am not exclusive, and you will not be offending me if you're honest. In fact, I won't even identify any individual response. Yeah. So I'm going to talk to, and it is amazing, and how much valuable research you can get from. Now you have to be careful about the science of this, and
yeah, go on.
Researchers might watch this and kind of tear their hair out. But in my experience, you've got quantitative accuracy. So you can go and say, like, we need to go and talk to 100 customers, otherwise we don't have a really good handle on.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Well, what's the number?
Yeah,
How many people?
But the real
is 100 even enough?
No, it's, not if you want a scientific way of fine-tuning a business. But you know what? 20 Qantas, I mean, I'm going to pick on Qantas just because it just popped into my head, but 20 Qantas customers would be enough to tell you what's going wrong with that business and has been going wrong with that business for the last few years at least. The first 10 will probably give you a good sense.
Yeah, because of the strength of the brand and recognition, and we all know it. When I'm calling for the local pub, I'll have to call 50 people before one says, yeah, I do know
right, now that's
pub,
a different problem. Like that problem is a problem of recruiting. And so, I mean, often it's a good thing to start with your existing customers. So you've got the people you can talk to establish what people think of you and your brand. You can talk to existing customers. Now, you've probably got, most businesses will have access to those people one way or the other. It's their existing customer list.
You've got them,
Then you've got past customers. So you've got some really interesting questions to ask past customers if they will be frank. Which is, why didn't you keep shopping with us? Why are you a past customer?
Yeah.
Why did you drop off? Was it something we did? By the way, most of the time, it's nothing to do with a dissatisfaction. It's just someone else appeared in their marketing funnel and did the branding work. I don't even know. The people
somehow,
don't even know. They just someone came into my life at the right time. Just
well, I
serendipity.
Would say, I would say from any business point of view, you didn't recognize how long the funnel is, and you dropped the ball somewhere, and someone came in
at the last minute.
On the end, while you were really hit them hard when they were not ready to purchase.
It's happened to us all, and you think, hang on, we've worked together for 10 years. we spoke to each other 6 months ago, and you've gone with them.
Yeah,
they had a great offer last week, and
it just wasn't, and I was ready to. true.
So I think, an interesting way of thinking about it might be existing customers. I mean, it's good to know what existing customers value and don't value. And there's a whole other conversation about kind of the things that people can put their fingers on when you ask them directly, you know, what do you like and not, and then observing their actual behaviour. So, I mean, you can also get a lot.
Let me put you on spot again, all right?
Yep.
So if the business needs those services and said, okay, I need market research for this particular group to look at my previous and current customers and to let me know how do they perceive me and also how the how the market works, because yes. I don't know it, because I'm not in it.
Yep.
Accounting firm, local pub, small business, what's the cost? How much do they need to spend to actually, in today's money, to get that information? Well, because it's important. Yeah, like, so a lot of people think it's prohibitive for the small business.
Okay, well, so let's start at the low end of the cost. That is, the cost is if you can send an email to your existing clients and ask them to fill in a survey. Now, there are biases and things, you know, like when you get a bias from people who want to, who tend to answer email surveys versus people who don't. But doing something is better.
What's their bias?
So the bias is that some people delete all their emails and hate receiving promotional emails, and other people love it.
Why is the one that doesn't like it as opposed to one that loves it? Why is the feedback different?
Well, they're just a different type of. Often you find that you're just talking to a slightly different type of customer. What you're hoping is that they're similar enough to the people. So say there's two groups of people, and they're like, broadly speaking, you've got people who like to have inbox zero and hate every email intrusion, and they say they never read any emails ever. But by the way, as an aside, they do. But they'll say
you have to read it before you delete it.
Yeah, that's right.
You don't know why you're deleting.
But for the sake of the argument, that you've got this group of people that just hate email responding to emails, and then you've got a group of people that love responding to emails and entering competitions. Then, you know, the one bias is that if you've got people that are just giving you a response because they're entering a competition, that might be different. Now, I'll give you an example of that happened to me today. I had a subscription to a magazine. I cancelled the subscription because I think it's too expensive, even though it's a very good magazine. And they, out of nowhere, have done some research. Now, I do think it's genuine research, not phishing.
Okay.
But they did ask me why I left. And I found myself answering the questions that I was hoping would lead to them giving me a discount offer on that subscription. So I'm a biased. I'm not actually giving them proper market research into that title. I'm giving them
yeah,
my
but that's
best
why you left. No.
Well,
you said they were too expensive on council. So if they reduce it, so you was honest.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Otherwise, you tell them it's not relevant to me or. Your content
yeah,
is
that's
rubbish,
true.
All right?
No, that's true. And maybe that makes the point, which is that even though I'm biased in some senses, there would be some questions that they could ask me. And another example of that is a lot of people ask people what their income is. And people ask way too many questions in surveys that they're never going to use, and income is often one. But it's bad for two reasons, and one is that people lie about their income because they're hoping that they'll win the prize.
It depends. If I think you're going to sell me something, I'm going to lie down. If I want something, I'm going to lie up.
Proving my point exactly. So, but the point is that you've got a zero cost option, which is to email some of your customers and ask them for their experience. And by the way, I mean, this stuff we used to, not that long ago, pay hundreds of thousands of dollars for very, very expensive people to prepare some of these questions and surveys. And in our office, we've got libraries of books, as you do, on how this is done. And these days, our friend ChatGPT 03 or whatever the latest model will be by the time anyone listens to this, if you say, I'm about to email my existing customers and I'd like some ideas for some questions that will give me a really good perspective on how they see my brand and my business. It will spit out some amazing questions to ask, and they will be quite good. So that's at the low end. And then you can go up from there to, now I think you're going to ask broader questions about research, and the further out you go from the control you've got over your own customers, you might want to, if you're a pub, you might want to explore whether there are
people that are not coming.
People that are not customers.
Why are they not coming?
So
have they heard? Maybe they know me, but they think something else. Look, I went to a restaurant once and I had a really bad service. And 10 years later, somebody said, let's go there. And I was like, yeah, all right. But I wasn't really happy about it.
Yep.
Reality is the ownership changed like four times by the time I got there. And that's how much affected me. And it was a fantastic experience. Fantastic experience. But you know, like it got imprinted in my mind for 10 years.
Yes.
And it was not far away from where I live. And I missed out on a lot of good dinners.
Everyone's lost. Yeah, yeah. No, this must happen all the time, yeah. Right? So a good thing to know, especially for smaller businesses, that research has been, so one of the upsides of the digital world is research has become much less expensive. I was about to say research is democratized, and I thought, oh, stop using this bullshit language. So research is much cheaper. You have to be careful with it, but there's a couple of suppliers that'd be very easy to find on any search who will, you can actually set up an online survey that will only go after the kind of people you want to go after, including geography. So if you've got a local
account.
So these
are third parties that said, listen, these are the people that I want to survey.
Yeah, I want women, women, or you know, if we take our accounting example.
Edge in this area.
Professional men and women over 50 because they might be the business owner. I want them in these areas because they're affluent or whatever. You tell the software where you want these people to come from. They will also help you build a survey. And you can ask them questions that can help find out, well, have you ever been to our, well, we'll take your restaurant example, have you been before, yes or no? And that's a very easy first question. If you have been before, why did you stop? Was it service, something else, whatever? They would have been able to uncover maybe a pattern. Mm-hmm. Or you can, okay, you've never been to our restaurant before, that's very interesting. Is it because you are a rejecter of the type of restaurant? We're an Indian restaurant. You can't eat spicy food.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to lose sleep over that. But you're an Indian food lover, and you haven't
come here. And I believe I've got the best Indian food. Why not? We've got the problem. Yeah.
Why not? Is it parking? Is it? And so on. You can find all these.
Okay.
Things.
All right.
Now this is slightly beyond the concept of brand, but it's all related.
I just want to go on AI. All right. Like you touched on AI and
yep.
marketing and advertising. And lately, I've been getting these emails. They're so obvious AI. You recognize them by language. You recognize them by little icons that they put next. You know, like
bullet points.
Bullet points. Yep. And it's always a calendar next to the time and everything. And honestly, I don't know. Maybe it's just me, but you tell me, like, is there any research on this? Because I'm saying, the moment I said, like, there was no time and effort put into a delete, I don't even read it, and actually deleted someone's email that was important to me, yep. right? Because I thought it was AI generated. And we mentioned AI. How much AI is here to stay,
yep.
right? And it's changing the world as we speak. But at the moment, today, how much input you need to put personally, how much is an AI? And is it better to ask AI to give you some information, or do you say, well, this is what I want as an expert in your case as marketing, and then say, come on, fine tune yep. this for me? I don't know that any of us
this
got
is,
any
this
answer.
Is
but
such
like,
a, this is such an interesting lead on from the last point about research, because I would have given you a different answer not long ago, maybe even a month ago,
yeah.
I would have probably given you a different answer. But the latest models of Gemini, which is Google, and O3, which is the new ChatGPT, I actually think they are getting so good that you probably could, in fact, not probably, I've done some of this already to test it out, but you can say, a local business CEO considering a new accounting firm, please evaluate and compare the branding of Strawberry
and whatever you
and
put in
Smith and Smith and whatever and any others that you find, and it will do an amazingly competent job. But it might not be the best thing that you've ever seen. But bearing in mind that most people don't do any market research or make any attempt to do what you're saying, which is getting out of themselves and looking back on the business, it's better than nothing.
That's got another issue now. Everybody's going to start doing it because it's easy, all right? And we're all going to get the same results.
Right.
Similar thing happened with email. 20 years ago, I started my business. $50 was buying me 50 leads. $50 doesn't buy me one lead.
I know. You know,
because everybody's on it. So the cost went up, but the competition got out. One thing that, again, democratized. but look, you know, small business can now compete with large business because it's a website next to the other website. Yep. There's no difference. I don't need to. So I think it's a big help to small business because I don't have to spend millions of dollars or hundreds of thousands of dollars on marketing people because I've got now in-house marketing, which I'm buying for like $14 a month.
Right. But I want to answer your question, which was to what extent do you need to kind of train and kind of prompt to get a good response as opposed to the really dodgy one that you mentioned? And we've seen it all, you know, I hope this email finds you well.
Oh, my God.
You know, like...
Who talks like that?
Yeah, no one talks like that.
It's like in the movies, you know, when they say... With all due respect. Who says that?
Yeah, no, I see. It means with absolutely no respect.
no, but in the movie. I've never heard anybody in real life says it with all due respect. Anyway, back to what you said.
That's right. That's right. So I think the latest models and in particular the ones that have come out in the last couple of weeks are solving that problem for themselves. Mm-hmm. Like they're kind of – they are really extremely good and they're probably generating – I would say they are generating better copy or writing for the purposes of branding than anyone that wants to slow down, read the literature and the books on branding. And there's great ones. You've got some on your shelf.
Yeah.
If anyone slows down, nothing has actually changed. It's all the same stuff, but actually it is – starting to do a pretty good job of capturing what has always worked. It knows what will work and what won't work. But it can be helpful to prompt. So anyone in a particular industry will probably know who's a market leader, who's a brand leader, who are influential people in an industry. And quite an interesting way of using these tools is to get it to come at your business from different types of customer, compare it with different, different businesses that compete in your space, and so on. And I think it's doing a better, and AI is doing a better and better job of doing that. And just as an example,
and faster, much faster.
Yeah, I did a query today with two different engines on an investor. And it came up with, I got 17 pages of analysis of this investment, of this investor's history of investments in all over the world, but particularly in Australia. And the AI identified a pattern of the investments that it was making, that this chap's making. And this was done in, 10 or 15 minutes of thinking time on the AI's side.
Yep.
But the critical thing isn't that it generated the facts, it's that it's now looking for patterns within the facts that are genuinely interesting insights. And and then the example with this investor is that he buys distressed assets. Like it said, here are the assets that this investor has bought throughout Australia. The common pattern with them all is that they are complex structures, strata structures, and they're distressed assets. Now that's quite an interesting analysis for an AI to go and do.
Well, AI only gets information from the available stuff on the internet, so it doesn't.
Right. That's right, of course.
It doesn't stop. You calling a mate and say, "What do you know about this guy?" All right.
of course.
Yeah. So,
but again, I'm contrasting this with a lot of these queries are, and let's go back to branding. But most people in small business don't intentionally do anything about their branding.
And that's
doing more than nothing is a great step forward. Any consistency, any insight into what it's like to be a customer, even if it's from AI and is a little bit scratchy, is probably better than
what you have than nothing. And that's why I wanted to talk to you, because most of the businesses that come to us, marketing is at best... lead generation.
Yes.
Very basic lead generation. From their point of view, brand is logo and few colors and maybe the message.
Yep.
And consistency is non-existent. And you can't really separate it from the business. So you can't value that brand separate from the business. There are certain brands, and we don't have a time to talk about it today, but there are certain brands that really had a, like, they got a pulling power because the exposure of that brand was so big that's in everyone's, it's imprinted in everyone's mind. And then if you plug yourself into that brand, you can drive the work to you or leads or clients to you. But most of the businesses, the small, medium-sized businesses, advertising is purely for lead generation and the brand is secondary. And the ones that manage to really build that brand exposure through and repetition, they actually worth more money, not because of the brand, but because of that they're making more money. So when it comes down to the business, it's the bottom line that matters. So they've done a good branding. Because of that branding, now the leads cost them less, they're converting better. On the bottom line, there's more money, and that's where the value is.
Yes, and there's some very good work by a guy called Byron Sharp looking at effectively what you're describing, which is we used to think that big brands were kind of built step by step from small businesses, and then that was driving the market share. But actually, it turns out it's probably the other way around. So as businesses grow and generate market share, their branding grows with it. To your point, it's all tied up together.
Correct. You can't have one without the other.
If you look at any famous brand in any market that you care to mention, they usually have a high market share of that industry or category. Now, the trick is, and the evidence is pretty strong on this, is that if you are spending ahead of your market share in your share of voice, so this is the share of voice versus the share of market. If your share of voice is higher than your market share, on average, you will tend to be at the margins exposing yourselves to lighter users in any category, and then that will grow your overall business. So the fallacy that we used to, again, fall into, similar vintage to the focus one I was saying before, was just, really concentrate on uptrading your light users to heavy users of your category or whatever that means in any industry. But now we realize that growth comes from having enough breadth in your area. And so it can still be a niche. It can still be a kind of a focus market. But you want to reach your marginal buyer. You want to reach your soons and laters as well as your nows. That's what branding does over the long term. And that, if your share of voice in your market is ahead of your share of your market value share. Oh. So say you're a 30%, say you have 30% value share of the market. So you're a 30% player in the market, but you are spending 50%, or you are 50% of the market spend, you will probably be A, growing.
You're going to grow from 30 towards those 50.
Yeah, your share will grow. So
let me. This is really interesting. Now you said spend, like you're talking dollar spend or exposure.
Well, probably more about exposure, but it's just that's
how do you get exposure without the spend?
Yeah, it's just the you could. A larger advertiser could look at target audience ratings points on TV, which are called TARPs, and you buy TARPs, and you could do a TARP analysis and so on. But the rule of thumb is that in general, businesses that spend more than they should, if you want to stay with the market, you might spend around about your share of the market. If you want to grow ahead of the market, you usually need to spend more than your share in the market. And if you look at small brand, and this is this can be to your point about cost, this can be expensive for a small brand that seeks to grow from 10% market share to 50.
Again, depends where you're marketing. So if you're marketing in your local suburb, it's easier.
Yeah, that might be easy.
It could be affordable, and maybe no one else is spending anything.
Right, that's right.
But national, when you with another large national brand.
That's a really harder. It's a really good point because it's the share of voice. Now we were talking dollars as a way of measuring that share, but it's the share of the voice. So if you're spending a small amount and no one's spending anything, that small amount can give you quite a lot of growth.
I've got one more question. Sponsorships.
Yep.
Right. How effective? Well, they're how effective and how to make it more effective when you're looking for sponsorship. I mean, you know, we all sponsor local soccer teams
depends
and
what
whatnot
you're doing
because you have to.
Yeah, that's right.
Do you actually make money out of? How do you get exposure to sponsorships?
So bottom line up front, the biggest mistake, and I've done like many sponsorships at many different levels, both when I was working client side and afterwards in consulting, but. The biggest mistake people make is they spend all their money on the sponsorship deal and they have no money for leverage. And so, for example, I'm going to sponsor the local kids' soccer team. It doesn't even matter what the sponsorship platform is, but they see that as the investment and they put a number down, $10,000 for a small business. That's a lot of money to put behind a local local team. But then they lack the resources or money to back that up with activity to make that valuable.
So, okay, so explain to me those activities that you see as valuable.
Right.
So I spent 10 grand on something.
Yeah, I'm going to give you a rough rule of thumb. Yeah. I don't know, someone might have told me this, so I might be ripping someone off of it, but I think it's right that if you can't spend four times the amount that you invest in the sponsorship platform on promoting and leveraging it, then you might be better off not doing it at all, because in that $10,000 investment, give or take, you want to get kind of 40 grand worth of. So if you're the local pub and you invest in the local soccer team and it's cost you 10,000, it's quite a lot of money, but maybe it's a big soccer team. I think around here there are some big soccer teams, so no doubt they probably do charge these kinds of.
So you spend 10 grand on some sponsorship. Yep. Where would you spend another 40?
So the 40? Other 40 would be advertising, promoting, or otherwise associating your business with doing that sponsorship, or making sure that you are being communicated, you are effectively being linked to by the sponsored organisation. So, and because what you don't want to do is just slap your logo, your badge on someone's shirt. And that's what most sponsorship people will buy a sponsorship package. They put their logo somewhere, and in the industry, it's called badge slapping. You just put a badge somewhere. You're okay because your sales team goes to a few events. Now that's pretty tricky if you've sponsored the local soccer team. Like, do all your customers want to go and see kids soccer? No, you're probably having to go. And so it inflates away. And the important thing is actually, have you told anyone about it? Are you
communicating?
Are you
communicating? Doing something good for the community,
you
got to let people know.
That's
boost about it.
And doing that costs you time or money or both, and energy.
So if you that's serious stuff. I mean, if you want to spend 10 grand on sponsorship, don't expect to bring much unless you spend another 40.
And I really mean that. I think that's probably not a bad way. You can't go wrong thinking that way because you need to think, what are the sorts of things that I would have to do to make. I mean, you're doing it. Presumably to get a return on the sponsorship. So that could come through, a lot of footy sponsorships and that sort of thing is corporate entertainment for sales teams and so on. But I've seen this happen. They think, great, I'll be able to get all my customers, they'll come to these football games. But those same customers are getting invited to the same football games by people with bigger budgets than you.
And they're already customers.
They're already customers. They're being offered the chairman's suite and you've only got the outdoor box. And then, you know, those tickets end up going to your staff or your relatives anyway, so there's no benefit there. That's a washout. You haven't promoted it to any of your potential customers. It's not on your email list, and yet well done. When it's well done, sponsorship can do very well because it helps with your brand.
My experience with any of the sponsorship, let's say associations and stuff, so in our case we targeting certain areas and we'll spend money on those associations. It's time that you spend, so don't expect that you're going to be sponsored for 1 year and everybody's going to flock, and it's the same to you because it's the same reason why we talked about this earlier. you need to show the investment before they actually trust you. So you come there 1 year, one major event, and then you go, I didn't get anything. Or, well, because people just met you, and a lot of people come in for one visit and never again.
Yep.
Once when I see you second time, third time, I said, oh, this guy's committed to us, so we start talking, all right? But another thing is, as a business, if you're involved in anything on this, don't expect that work's going to come to you. You have to then go back to call organizers. What else can I do? How do I?
That's it.
Can I get a list? Can I get involved?
That's what I'm
can
talking
I talk
about.
To these
that's
people?
The yeah. that's the four. You know, that's the 4-to-1 investment, yeah. either in your time or your money. Doing the work to generate something to come out of it, because it, in general, if the work doesn't happen, you don't get the results. But because we've been talking a lot about branding, one of the good things about sponsorship is it does give you a shortcut if you do it well and you're prepared to do that work. It does give you a shortcut to brand and brand positioning. For example, if I'm a local engineering firm and I sponsor rugby union, mm-hmm. a local rugby union team, that actually sends a slightly different signal to I'm a local team and I sponsor a rugby league team. Now, they're very close in the physical game, but they're very different in potentially demographics and who they attract. And that's just a simple example. And you push that much further apart. So do you sponsor motor racing or
so it
fine
comes what
arts.
We talked at the very beginning, who's your customer, who you're exactly. targeting, and then figure out
exactly what and sponsorship can be a very, very quick way of generating. It's almost a cheat code, because if you do it well, you get to attach your brand to a well-known other brand, and that is a
I have seen businesses that have done fantastic work with marketing through the trade shows, and you know, like depending on the product that you got, but through exposure on the trade shows, and eventually they become order takers, people waiting for them to go to the trade show before they can actually, because they know they were there, so they come in and say, oh, your first couple of years, I want to place the order, and it's just fantastic. But overall, my opinion is, marketing is not, like I tried to push you on this, how can I do it very shortly to build a brand in a short period of time? The answer is,
spend a lot of money.
Yeah, spend a lot of money. Or if you don't have a lot of money, you got to spend a lot of time. It's not something that can be done overnight, because you need to prove to market that you're worthy of their trust. And you can't do that in 6 months. Like, it doesn't work in marriage, it doesn't work in life.
You're
doesn't
right.
work in anything. You're going to invest the time.
That's right. And your point about trust is important, because branding started to be about people being able to physically identify. I mean, in the super olden days, I think branding, the etymology is stamping brands on animals so that you could tell when your animal went over to the field over the road, you knew it was your animal and not someone else's, and you could identify the animal. This is all about trust, and you're right. It's about being able to identify, and some of that happens at the rational level, but a lot of it happens instantaneously at the subconscious level.
Oh, absolutely.
When you're seeing the same brand represented in the same way, and you don't even have to think as much.
Well, Matt, this is a good place to stop this conversation. We've talked for about an hour and a half. Hey, if somebody needs a help with branding or advertising or anything else that you do, how can they find you?
Come and have a look at website. turningleaf.com.au. It's turning-leaf.com.au, and happy to talk
and
with a mouthful of marbles underwater about marketing positioning, and we do a lot of general strategy work, so happy to talk to anyone.
Hey, Matt, thanks a lot for sharing this with us.
Thanks,
and thanks for being here.
A pleasure.
Need help selling your business, buying a business, or a business valuation? Exclusive Business Sales award-winning team are here to help. Our experience, skill, expertise, and professionalism, backed by our triple guarantee, is assurance for your success. The largest network of buyers and our national coverage will help you throughout Australia in all state capitals and regional areas. Exclusive Business Sales. Sell your business with certainty.